to the Wisconsin Vegetable Garden Radio Show with your hosts, Joey and Holly Berry.
It is the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show, the WisconsinVegetableGardener.com, your destination for all things gardening. 925 videos. I always forget how many videos because we've just got so many. Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, the WisconsinVegetableGardener.com. You can find all that and a whole lot more there. Well, let's go to the IVOrganics.com hotline and bring in our next guest, Holly.
Christina Ward is a certified master food preserver for Milwaukee County. She is a Milwaukee native who teaches canning classes, volunteers in the community, and sells unique jams and jellies at local farmers markets. Christina is also an advocate for safe canning and food preserving. I have taken many of her classes and learned a great deal from her. She's also the author of the recent book, Preservation, the Art and Science of Canning, Fermentation, and Dehydration. Welcome to the program, Christina.
Good morning, everyone. How are you?
Well, thank you very much for taking time out of your day to join Holly, myself, and all of our listeners to make us safer when it comes to canning.
It's always my pleasure to spread the good word about safe food preservation practices.
So, in your book, you kind of touch on this, and it's a very nice book, well written. And I just want to ask, why do we need master food preservers in our communities?
I think the MFPs, and master food preservers, serve a really important role. And primarily, it's about getting the information, the latest and greatest scientific research, out to people. And it's a way to teach it. I mean, we're so disconnected sometimes by what our grandparents did and what our parents did, and we want to know, but we also have to acknowledge that science moves forward, and we're smarter scientifically than we were, say, 50 years ago. And so the MFP, that job, you know, that role, that volunteer role, is to get that science out to the community.
Well, and that's the thing. You know, everybody wants to carry on that heirloom recipe from their great-grandmother from 1897, but we've learned now, like you just spoke about, that's not really the safest. It's great to put in a frame and hang above the mantle, but it's not good to go ahead and try to put that recipe in a jar and expect it to be safe in 2017.
It is. I mean, exactly. And that's where your MFP and your county can help you out, too, is that there's ways, there's updated recipes. So you can take your grandmother's recipe, and once you understand some of the science behind it, and you can consult with your MFP, they can take a look and say, okay, your recipe is great, and if you do this one small thing differently, you'll get your great-grandmother's pickles or jam and still have it be safe for your family.
Now, you were on Fox 6 this past week, and I watched that segment, great segment. You brought up a term in which I didn't know existed, which was Milwaukee pickles. Now, Holly, are you familiar with what Milwaukee pickles are?
No.
Okay. Christine, would you define what the difference between a Milwaukee pickle is and the rest of the country pickle are?
Yeah, Milwaukee dills are unique. I mean, Milwaukee and Wisconsin have such a great ethnic kind of immigrant history. And so Milwaukee dills are very much like a hybrid of that Eastern German Polish style of vinegar pickling. And really what sets it apart is our combination of spices. And so our pickling spice, which one of my favorites is always at Penzi's, locally owned Penzi spices, it includes clove, and our style of pickle also is very heavy on the mustard seed and the turmeric. And it gives our pickles a little bit of a different taste. If you go to other places in the country or buy more, you know, brands that are not originated from Milwaukee, you'll notice that difference.
Now, we get this question a lot when Holly does the basics of canning classes, teaches, you know, the courses. What, my pickles are soft, they don't have the snap. What is your secret to getting your pickles to get that pop that you were familiar with store-bought?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a couple different things, and it's always in the production. Your home production. First of all, I always say you have to think about what your goal is. If you're thinking about like the quote unquote Vlasic style refrigerator pickles, you're never going to get that if you're canning them in a hot water process. And that's okay. So make refrigerator pickles and know that they're not going to last as long. If you're looking for the jarred long shelf life pickles, then you're going to process them. And the mistake that most people make that results in a soggy pickle is that they're moving too slow. And what I mean by that is they're not using the freshest cucumbers they can possibly get. You want to use as fresh as possible. And then people are processing them too long. They're leaving them too in the jars. You need to move with speed and purpose. Get those in the jar, get the pickling solution over them, get them processed, and get them out of the canner as soon as they're done.
And that kind of goes with any canning procedure. You just don't want to lollygag around and take your sweet time. This is a time-sensitive thing.
It is. It is. And that's, you know, the timing on a recipe is calculated for you. And that's there's a whole bunch of algebra that and physics that goes into how long should a jar be submerged to create the vacuum seal, push out any extra oxygen, and make that safe. So, you know, don't mess around and don't decide that, well, I'm going to only, you know, process for half that time because of, you know, I need to go and have, you know, go out to lunch. You can't do that. If you're processing, if you're making stuff for food preservation, you need to kind of commit to the project and see it through to the end.
Now, there's, I mean, Holly and I are lazy. I'll admit that. I'm sure you're probably lazy in some aspects of life. But when it comes to canning, people, you know, the recipe says need a half inch of headspace. Well, I've got a little extra. I'm just going to top the jar off, put it in the canner, and be done with it. There's a reason why there's a headspace requirement for all canning procedures, correct?
Absolutely. And it goes back to that algorithm of, there's a relationship between that negative space in the jar, the material, what you're canning, the jar, and the processing time. And so if you drastically change one of those elements, you're essentially, the results will be unsafe. Whether if you haven't left it, if you underfilled your jar, that means that there still could be oxygen in there. And if there's oxygen, there could be microbes. And you've just created this like beautiful anaerobic environment. And anaerobic is the key, meaning without oxygen, because the deadliest of all of the microbes are anaerobic ones, and I'm talking about botulism. And so there's never any amount of laziness that if the result is death, you don't get to be lazy. You have to do it the right way.
Absolutely.
Thank you for touching on that. So if I see, if I see a recipe just randomly shared online, maybe I'm looking at my favorite bloggers' recipes and they're showing a canning recipe or in a Facebook group or who knows where, should I assume it's safe? And how do I know? Or should I only use trusted resources? How do I be the best safe canner when it comes to this day and age where everything is so true on the internet?
Well, there's a combination of things you can do to arm yourself against unsafe practices. First of all, and that's what my book is trying to address with folks, is if you understand the basic scientific concepts of what you're doing and why you're doing it, you will be able to recognize when a recipe and a product is unsafe. For example, there are folks that are trying to can low-acid foods in a hot water bath, something low-acid, say, like just a jar of potatoes. And they're like, well, we'll just boil it longer. Well, fundamentally, because you're not getting the temperatures to where they need to be to drive out any microbial life, you're making something unsafe. And if you know that super high temperatures are what kill botulism, you'll know when you see that recipe saying, that's not safe. When you're starting out, going to trusted websites is a good place to go. The Extension Service, throughout the country, and the Center for Home Food Preservation has a vast repertoire of tested recipes that are free and available to access online. And that's a great place to start.
Now, people have done canning for a number of years and different practices. And one question, we get a lot of questions, and I'm sure you do too, is my grandmother, and not mine, but this is the question, my grandmother, when she pulled the canning jars out of the canner, she would flip them upside down on the cabinet. What was the reason for that? And I know that is not a safe practice, but what was the mindset behind people who did that?
Oh, you know, and that's so funny. It's so funny how we have like these, it's like an appendix memory. So we remember grandma did it, and so we do it because that's what she did. But again, it comes back to understanding the science. A lot of folks actually didn't hot water bath things. They just didn't understand enough about germ theory to understand that high temperatures would kill microbes. So the old-fashioned way would be to pour paraffin wax over the whatever the material in the jar was. And then after the wax begins to seal, they'd flip them over. And with the idea that you could get a good seal, there's no oxygen. Well, now we know that that's just not true. How small microbes are, that there's no way that would happen. But again, so that memory of flipping jars has kind of passed along, even with the two-part lid. So this is something that people did, in the 30s, 40s, and yet then started, even as modernity, as the new lids kind of came into onto the market, they would still keep flipping jars. Again, so there's no need to do it. It's not really safe at all, because, again, you create some pressure against the lid as it's trying to seal. So, again, that's one of the reasons for the master food preserver and the idea of getting that information out there. What was safe in 1920 is not necessarily safe today.
Thank you. And so, other than canning, real quickly, what are some other good ways anyone can preserve food?
There's so many different methods and techniques out there. And so fermentation is enjoying a resurgence. And we're talking about, like, sauerkraut, kimchi, fermented pickles. So that's a great way to, again, a real fun experiment with trying that. And fermentation is essentially your bacterial farming. Instead of just driving out all microbes, you're inviting the good ones in and to create a form of acid to preserve the food. And the other one is dehydration. Again, removing any of the water, removing water essentially extends the life of your food. So dehydration, again, another great method for preserving food.
And you talked about, you know, the microbes and the diseases and all that stuff that we're getting out of the jar properly canning. There's people who will go, well, I'm just going to save on lids and reuse lids again. For $2.50, is it really worth the risk of death to save a few bucks by reusing lids that are not designed to be reused?
Absolutely not. And the same thing with, like, reusing old peanut butter jars. They're not designed to be used multiple times. And here's the, when I get asked that question or people scoff, here's what I say. I say, do you really want your family to have your obituary read you died because of a bad jar of potatoes or jam? No, that's ridiculous. So there's just no reason to not do things the safe way.
Right. You're going to save more money by canning it correctly than you are going to buy something that you have no idea where it came from, what was put in it, and be happy and healthier that way.
Absolutely. And there's the economic reasons, especially you guys are the gardeners. People listening are gardening. What a great way to extend your harvest by doing a little food preservation, whether it's fermenting, dehydrating, or canning. All that hard work you put into growing your vegetables, you get to enjoy them year-round. And there's nothing beats eating something that you made, you harvested and made, and cracking open a jar in February when it's cold out.
Well, yeah, definitely. We couldn't agree more. So how can people find your book, classes, and even where you sell your jams?
I'm a bit retired from selling jams right now, so kind of taking a break. But there are other great local sellers in on the market in Milwaukee area and in Wisconsin. So definitely seek them out, ask them questions about their practices, and then support them. My book is available at independent bookstores all over the country as well as on Amazon.
If you've not got Christina's book, you need to look at it because it's well. It's got a lot of information, and Christine, you've done a very well job of putting this book together. You didn't put no fluff in there. It's all serious. It's about canning and what you need to know.
Not complete. There's some really good stories.
Stories, but it gets to the point. It's not just, you know. It's important. You're trying to get the message out there, and you did a very good job with that in your book.
Well, thank you. And my goal again is always to, I don't want people to be afraid of the science. The science, if you just understand it at a high level, and I try to make it easy to understand so you can apply it to your food preservation practices without needing the degree in microbiology.
Absolutely. Well, Christine, we greatly appreciate you taking time out of your day to join Holly and myself and our listeners to advise us on better and safer canning procedures, and we thank you for that.
Thanks so much for the opportunity. Happy preservation, everyone.
Thank you, Christina.